We cannot let their voices stifle our cause. This political crisis puts our head in their jaws. History is upon us. We've seen this before. We can never allow freedom to exit our shore. Good afternoon and welcome to the Trump Chronicle. I'm your host, Ray Brookstein. Ladies and gentlemen, the state of Florida has been and will always be a political battleground state. It's been my home on and off since 1992. In fact, my welcoming moment was Hurricane Andrew. It's obvious to many Americans why Florida is such a destination. It has 1,350 miles of coastline, an average yearly temperature of 71 degrees, there's no state income tax, and it's been a gateway to the United States from Cuba, the Caribbean, Central and South America. It has great cities on either coast, a great outdoor life. It's a very diverse community and accommodates many languages. However, politically speaking, it's a rough and tumble place to navigate. There are natives who have been here since Flagler's railroads connected the North and South, and transplants from many of the great Northern American cities, Canada, and Europe. In fact, the people joke that the state bird of Florida is the snowbird who flies south in the winter to escape the cold. And they also bring with them their politics. Now, in 2016, Florida delivered a win for Donald Trump, Senator Rick Scott, and Governor Ron DeSantis. It was a trifecta for Republicans and conservatives. However, 2018 delivered the House back to the Democrats with their hopes to increase their power in 2020, hitched to a socialist agenda. Now, Florida's Congressional District 21 houses Mar-a-Lago, the president's southern residence, and is one of the wealthiest districts in the United States, including prime Gold Coast locations of West Palm Beach, Delray, Boca Raton, and Pompano Beach. It's predominantly a Democrat district. Any challenger is going to have a tough uphill battle. My guest today is Michael Bloomling Jr., who is running for Congress in this very district as a Republican. His story is both compelling and awe-inspiring. Michael is age 41. He's a disabled combat Army veteran who has also authored three books. He's a survivor of child abuse at the hands of his father, who tried to end his life several times. He's been a fierce advocate for our veterans, having worked for the Office of Veterans Affairs and the U.S. Department of Labor. He founded Power One in 2013 to help veterans transist to civilian life. He's a patriot, a father, who is highly decorated with a distinguished service record for our country. Michael knows too well the ongoing plight of today's veterans, as he himself is homeless. Nonetheless, he appears to be working tirelessly for his community, his constituents, his campaign, and his faith. So welcome, Michael. It's a great honor to have you here on America Out Loud in the Trump Chronicle.
Thank you so much for having me, Ray. I really appreciate it.
You know, Michael, I must admit that when I first heard about your circumstance and your campaign for Congress in 2020, I said to myself that you must be one of the strongest-willed men alive or the craziest. Which is it?
Well, basically what it comes down to is, and I have a very interesting story, of course, but the story basically started, I'll start at this point, is in 2014, I graduated with my master's from Pennsylvania State University. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I had about 13 years with the government. I was an investigator for the Department of Labor. I worked in employment law, so I worked for discrimination, affirmative action, equal opportunity against women, minorities, individuals with disabilities, veterans, et cetera, by government contractors. And so I just graduated from my master's. In 2013, I had started a company, Power of One, that you mentioned, and I published my first book. And so I moved down to Florida. I left the federal government. I moved down here. I had been traveling down here for several years. I come from a military family. I was an Army brat. I was born in Fort Benning, Georgia. Mm-hmm. My father served in Vietnam on the USS Kitty Hawk, and my grandfather served in Korea, and other members of my family have served, and my sister's still serving. So I moved down here, just graduated from my master's. I have my bachelor's business degree, 13 years of experience, a high-level experience. I was a GS-12 with the federal government, which is very high. I was a non-commissioned officer in the United States Army. I was mechanized infantry. I was pre and post 9/11. I was part of two conflicts of America for America. And so I moved down here wanting to buy a house and continue the American dream. I had worked so hard my entire life. As you mentioned, my father tried to kill me not once, not twice, but three different occasions. The first time on May 28th, 1984, was documented on the paper and the news. He beat me with a belt. I looked like a piece of meat in the market. And it was very, you know, a tragic experience, but the system kept putting me back. The next time my father tried to kill me, whenever he slammed my head off the kitchen floor and I woke up naked in the shower and with cold water with him and my mother trying to bring me back to life, basically. And that was never, you know, reported to the police or, you know, anything like that. And I was talking to my mother the other day and she's like, oh, you've been talking about the first time, you know, when you were five a lot, but, you know, it was worse the second time. So just imagine when you're talking to your mother and my mother was abused and raped by my father as well. When he got out of the military, he turns to drugs and alcohol. Mm-hmm. It was a really tragic story. And just to, you know, those kind of words just kind of like, you know, it just makes you realize what I've really overcome. And the third time he tried to kill me, he tried to throw me over a 150-foot bridge.
Amen.
Oh, and he was arrested. He was actually arrested that time again. So I was in and out of the system a lot when I was a kid, just, you know, trying to heal. And, you know, those times abuse was kind of, and I still, even today, abuse is still swept under the rug. But so I moved down here to Florida in 2014 after I graduated with my master's. I've been working my entire life. I've done all these amazing things, lived in Europe for 3.5 years. Everything I've been able to accomplish in my life, you know, I started a company, wrote my first book. I moved down here. I wrote my second and third book and I wanted to buy a house and get a job, you know, and I figured with all my experience and just investing, you know, upwards of $80,000 on my two degrees that I would be able to get a job down here. So I moved to Florida and I could not get a job. Mm-hmm. So I was down here for 6 months. I wrote my second and third book during that time period. But I had some money saved during that time period and I had to move and I was homeless in 2014 in October. I moved down here in May. Right before I moved down here, I had a TV interview. You know, I did a book signing tour with Barnes and Noble. So, you know, I've done all these, you know, great, amazing things. I moved down here ready to take my life to the next chapter. And then I realized that, you know, there's a lot of work that can be done down here in Florida to improve the community, but I ended up homeless. Mm. So when I was homeless, you know, I was just like, this is just ridiculous. You know, I've paid my debt to society. I'm doing all these amazing things in my life. I'm trying so hard. I'm not taking any freebies. You know, I believe that there should be opportunities and that's what the American dream is. You work for an opportunity and then there's something waiting for you there. But sometimes that's not, life isn't fair like that. Even though, you know, you try to be the very best person you can, you overcome, you achieve, you strive for something great. You know, because I know that I'm going to impact millions of people. I've known that my entire life, just basically what I've been able to overcome. So I was homeless and I ended up moving back to Virginia. So I moved back to Virginia. I ended up getting a 6-figure job. Things started to pick up. But then my job moved to Michigan in 2016. Mm-hmm. At that point, I was just like, I was trying to live in Florida. I'm trying to have structure. You know, I've had all this chaos in my life. I want to make a difference in the world. It's not happening up here in Michigan. So I left the company, moved back to Virginia. And when I moved back to Virginia, I ended up working for the state of Virginia. I ran the veteran program. I was part of the governor's initiative. I helped create over 30,000 jobs for veterans in Virginia. So I say all this to come to the point when I came back to Florida, which was October 2017.
Well, you know, I've seen, you know, and thank you for that honesty and transparency. I mean, that's something that just has not resonated with a lot of people in politics. There's always some unknown agenda, and I appreciate that. Now, I've seen some photos of you, you know, on Twitter campaigning. I mean, you're a good-looking guy, you're clean-shaven, very well-dressed, next to a nice vehicle. So you're not street homeless, right?
No. So basically what happened, I was at a crossroads in October of 2017, and I have a very strong faith and I felt that God called me that you're meant to be in Florida. There's a reason why you have to go down there, go back to Florida. So at that point, I had a brand new Benz. You know, like I said, I had a six-figure job. I, you know, things had started to pick up, but then it was like just something. It's like one of those things in life. You go through a transition, something, one thing happens. I mean, it happens to all Americans. Like, I can relate to so many different people just on the things I've experienced, the journey I've had. And so I decided to move back down here. So I had a brand new Mercedes-Benz. I traded it in. I got like a used car. I moved back down here. And the first 6 months I was homeless down here again.
Wow.
And I did that because I believed in myself and I know that my life has a purpose and I'm not going to let my circumstance design the remainder of my life or what I've accomplished and what I will accomplish.
Well, it's really unbelievable and it really is awe-inspiring. You know, you're not exactly the prototypical Republican candidate who would run in one of the wealthiest districts in America. But then again, the Democrats are no longer prototypical either, are they? It's not the same party as it was of JFK, like when I grew up, is it?
No, I mean, right now, there's a lot of terrorists who hate Americans. We have immigration laws that need to be changed. We need to be focused on our foreign policy. There's a lot of people that want to make our country government run. I worked under President Barack Obama in the federal government. And let me tell you that big government does not solve problems. It doesn't, you know, fight more discrimination. It doesn't bring more peace to the land. It doesn't, you know, cause economic growth. It's a draw on society and it makes people lethargic and lazy and it does not help. My platform is based on providing resources and education to the community and eliminating fraud, waste, and abuse. That's what the people of District 21 want. I've been out in the community beating down doors, talking to people, and everything I do is for the love of the community. It doesn't really come down to the dollars, which it does, but it really comes down to the belief in humanity and the obstacles that we're facing right now. It's really more of a good versus evil.
Yes.
Honestly, like a lot of things that, you know, a lot of people say, you know, Congress has lost sight of what their purpose is. And I believe that I can be someone that comes to Congress with my wealth of experience and education and just being actually in the community and not having a self-serving interest, not having, you know, a specialized interest to receive a financial gain. Of course, I want to be able to, you know, be financially secure, but not on the backs of people that are dying. For example, I met someone the other day and insulin used to be $20 for a vial. Now it's $400. And people are dying. So when you talk about illegal immigrants coming to this country, getting free health care, we have Americans, we have veterans who are homeless and who are dealing with obstacles.
Talking about obstacles, are you getting any flack or roadblocks from the local Republican Party, much like the RINOs are doing in Congress to President Trump?
Right now, I'm considered someone that is not controllable. And what that means is that I have a very fresh perspective. I have a lot of energy. I'm dedicated to the cause. I love the United States of America. I love the American people. I serve the people with the people side by side. And that is not good for the establishment because they don't want that. So I've been followed. I've had, you know, my phone hacked into as far as email or texts are being monitored. I've been called not a veteran, which I'm a highly decorated veteran for this country, which I find comical that they would try that. That I've been called a Democrat, which I've never been a Democrat in my life. And then I've been accused of, you know, because I'm single, I've been accused of you know, just extramarital affairs, all these different, you know, things that are just unfounded. So, you know, the attacks are there. They're going to try to do everything to destroy my character. I've never done a drug in my life. I've never been arrested. I've worked for everything that I've been able to accomplish, and I will never stop working for the American people.
You know, I've done a little checking in on, you know, the incumbent, a Democrat who's had a long history. And basically, the Democrats have ruled the roost in District 21, and at one point it was District 22. It's a little confusing, actually, with the way they restructured the districts. But you know, she has a long political career that stretches from the state house many years. She's been the mayor of West Palm Beach, you know, and looking at some of the election results, the incumbents have won by about 16 points. So how are you going to strategize to win this district in 2020? How are you going to get those 8 points you need to even up?
The way I'm going to do that is a lot of people in politics, and I've worked at federal government, state government. I've also worked up in Tallahassee. I was part of four boards down here. I went up before session, during session in 2018 and 19 here. And I really got an understanding that it's about the people, the community. When you rally with the people, that's where the change happens. The establishment can only control the voice or the white noise, or they try to create confusion or obstacles. But at the end of the day, the voters still have to go out. The reason why Barack Obama won is because he got the people to get out and vote. And also, you know, we also had some help with a little bit of voter fraud and things of that nature that, you know, wasn't, you know, helping the Republicans in different positions that were running for political offices. But that's what it's going to take. It takes people who believe in my story. They believe in me. They know that I'm going to fight for them. It's having a strategic plan. My strategic plan is to get out with every single person, every voter, let them know that I care about them, that I love them, and I want their, you know, family to be taken care of. I don't want any shootings at schools, that I'm for our Constitution of the United States of America. I want more rights for our voters, not less. I want to make sure that there is an infrastructure in place where they are able to raise their family in South Florida, stay here. It's a beautiful, beautiful, I mean, we have one of the best places in America to live and work and to enjoy. And I want to improve the quality of life of every voter and every person that's in District 21, which is about 700,000 people.
And that's a typical district size, correct? Across the United States, that's pretty much how a district is formulated.
I mean, it could vary based on, you know, large cities and the demographic, things of that nature. But for down here, like you said, there was some redistricting and, you know, some of those things play out a certain way. But I'm just excited about the people that are here and are coming every day. 1,200 people move to Florida. Those people are coming to Palm Beach County. We need to have an infrastructure to be able to support that. I want to work with Governor DeSantis. I want to ensure that we have safety in our schools. As I mentioned, I want to make sure that our health care is in line. I want to work in Congress for our veterans. I want to make sure that they're taken care of. I want to make sure our retirees and senior citizens and our individuals with disabilities, that they're not taken advantage of and fraud committed against them. So there's a lot of work to be done. But when you break it down day by day, that's where it happens. I mean, anything in life, it starts with one brick. So the way that I'm going to be able to do that is one brick at a time, but it's going to take volunteers. It's going to take the community. A lot of people are ready for change. And what I challenge people is if you want change, if you're ready for change, if you're tired of the same old, then do something about it. And I'm a champion. I want to run for U.S. Congress. I want to represent you, and I want to be a leader for you, but with you.
That's fantastic, Michael. I mean, I'm just... You know, there's a interesting demographics in the first couple of minutes in the first segment here. What are the demographics in 21?
Well, we have, you know, it's a heavy Democratic district. There are a great number of independents. So there are a lot of people who have left both parties, quite frankly, because, you know, they're sick. A lot of people that I'm talking to, and I've talked to people every single day, they're tired of the same rhetoric up in Washington, D.C. They're tired of the hate. They're tired of things not being able to get done. They want to see, you know, we got to think about our future of our nation. We got to think about our, you know, the protection of our troops. We got to think about our communities being safe. You know, a lot of things that people take for granted, people are starting to realize that if we don't take care of them today, such as Social Security, Medicare, you know, things of that nature. If we don't start aware of them now, later on, we're not going to have time. We're going to run out of time. It's kind of like quicksand, you know, you get your foot in, and if you're not able to get it out, then next thing you know, your whole leg's in there and your body's in there, and then you're trapped.
The America Out Loud Truth will continue in a moment.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
You know, Michael, you mentioned Medicare and Social Security. Now, your district is an age district. It's a lot of people that earn their money up north and bought second homes down here, and they live down here permanently. And Medicare and Social Security are very important to these constituents. What is your philosophy on preserving these two key issues?
Well, the thing is this. Our baby boomers have paid a debt to society. They've carried the workload for a long period of time. And they come back down here to Florida, District 21, Palm Beach County. They want to make sure that all the work that they've done isn't stolen from them. That's not a draw on society. That's an obligation we have to pay back to them for their sacrifice for us. I mean, think about it. You know, as time and history progresses, there's always movements and key points. You know, you look at, you know, the man walking on the moon for the first time, or the assassination of John F. Kennedy. Mm-hmm. That's how big of a tremendous help to society that our retirees and senior citizens have done for this country. They've done amazing things for our country, and I don't think it's talked about enough, the sacrifices that they have made, whether it be in serving our country in World War II, the Vietnam era, you know, all these different areas of opportunities that they've, you know, been able to go through to help us become the nation that we are today. So I thank them for their service, whether they served in the military or not. And when you think about a $4 billion fraud for Medicare, for back braces, and you don't see any of the business owners, none of the doctors, I haven't seen anyone in jail. It's kind of like a story. It comes out and it's like, oh, it's just kind of like we're numb to it. It becomes like, oh, it's just, it's okay. We just took a draw off on society. A whole bunch of people got rich, and now our seniors, you know, their 401ks are lost, or, you know, they got to come up with the money for medication that is, you know, the cost of medication is way out of control. So when you look at these things, you're like, wow. You know, thank you for taking care of our country. And now, you know, we'll make sure that we're going to pay you back the right way. I don't agree with that.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you've been very close to the veterans issues. And we know that suicides are happening at a rate of about 20 a day. It's one of the greatest stains on our country is how we've abandoned our veterans. And you're a veteran. You've been active in veterans issues. What can we do to straighten this out and help our dear brothers and sisters who serve this country?
I've talked about this a lot. The number one thing that veterans need when they transition is they need support, but they need a job. The reason why I had difficulty when I moved back down here and I became homeless was because of a job. You know, right now, my master's is in human resources. That's my specialty. I worked in employment law. I was going to go to law school. I actually took the LSAT, but I decided because I needed to work full time. I have two children, so I needed to work to, you know, handle my responsibilities. And in human resources, there isn't someone now who just turns in an application and you meet the hiring manager, you meet the CEO of a small company or a mid-sized company or a VP or an HR director. You don't meet those kind of people. So before, you used to be able to do that though. You used to come in, you hand your resume and you're dressed well, you talk well, and someone's eager to give you an opportunity. And that's all veterans want. I mean, they paid their dues to this country. I mean, every single person that served our country is an absolute hero. So when you talk about suicide, one suicide is in this country is ridiculous. I had someone I served with downrange commit suicide a little over a year ago. And I just remember seeing his name. We go by our last names in the military. I remember seeing his name on his uniform. And I served with this guy for about 2-3 years, did a deployment with him. And he felt at 39 years old that his life wasn't worth it anymore. And there's probably a lot of different factors that come to that, you know, emotionally, psychologically, physically, you know, depending whatever that individual was dealing with. Mm-hmm. But it's such a tragedy. But you know what? It all starts with a job. If you have a job, and right now our unemployment rates are really low. But the problem when it pertains to veterans is that they're underemployed. What that means is they're in jobs right now that are less than, they're not getting paid the value of what they're worth. So that puts a strain on their family because you still have to You still have to put gas in your car. You still have to put groceries on the table. You still have to pay the mortgage. You know, you still have to take care of family responsibilities for as like, you know, school activities, things of that nature. So when you put that all into a box and, you know, they're trying to, you know, maybe they were in combat. Maybe they had, you know, some, you know, maybe they're dealing with a disability, you know, that they got while they were in the military. You know, they came, they went in whole and they came out not the same person. So, you know, I believe that we have an obligation to our veterans to make sure that we have a process for them. And a lot of times what I've seen, I've done a lot of work in the veteran space. I see that veterans are kind of treated like a transaction. You know, you got the GI Bill, you know, right. I think it's about 88% of people that just for an associate's degree for military veterans aren't able to finish an associate's, just an associate's, not even a bachelor's.
Mm-hmm. You know, the Congress, I mean, this is not a new issue, right? I mean, this has been going back decades of continuously kicking the can down the road. And I will say that Donald Trump is the first one to put his foot on the can. And is this something that can be taken or tackled at a congressional level to free up some resources for re-education or, you know, like you did to integrate a veteran that's coming back, you know, into the community, providing a way for them to get employed at a decent level? I mean, it reminded me when you were talking of the movie Rambo, when, you know, he would say, you know, I learned to, you know, handle $25 million pieces of equipment, but I can't get a job. So, you know, is this something that the Congress can do, or is this going to be a continuous kicking the can down the road?
Well, that's the thing. You know, it takes someone to stand up, and I'm that person. One of the books I wrote, it's called Bridging the Gap from Soldier to Civilian, A Roadmap to Success for Veterans. Basically, in the book, it's the beginning of the book, the first three chapters are focused on before you leave the military. Basically, getting you squared away before you leave the military so you're prepared. And they've made some advancements there, but it's hard because the military community, they still have a job to get done. Every day we got a job to get done. So when you're leaving the military, it's not a super emphasis just because of the nature of the work. You know, if you don't have troop readiness, then whenever you need something's called to battle or time to stand up, to muster up, then you have a deficiency. So we can't have that in our military. But then when they go to get out, then it's like they're lacking those skills that, you know, they could have been gaining at the, so it's just such a unique circumstance that I don't believe that part will ever change. But what can change is the process of okay. when they're getting ready to get out of the military and when they're going in back into civilian life. And we should be doing everything, and we can do so much of a better job in this area. So what I try to do is I try to focus on, and I'm going to continue to do this when I'm elected into U.S. Congress, when I defeat Lois Frankel in the 2020 election, is I'm going to help that pathway and build. It's really more, there's a lot of distrust. And what I want to do is create a clearinghouse where we have veteran organizations, community-based organizations. There's a lot of federal funding and state funding, local funding for our veterans, our brave men and women. But there's also, there's so much abuse. And the veterans don't know where to go. They don't know which organization is good or bad. They don't know who they can trust. They feel like, you know, everybody's taking advantage of them. You know, they become depressed. They're dealing with anxiety. They just want to live their life. I mean, they served our country. Let them come home and be free. Mm-hmm. They fought for our freedom. Let them come home so they don't have to deal with this anymore. Let them have a remnant. Just let them have some peace in their life. That's what we should be doing. And when you create confusion with a financial gain, that's where the problem lies. And I'm going to fight in U.S. Congress because when they get back to civilian life, we should be doing everything in our power to thank them, to love them, to give them all the infrastructure. And that starts with having a clearinghouse that we can say, hey, these are people that are actually going to help you. They have results that are documented that show that they've been able to do it. And that's going to quell, that's going to crush a lot of things that are hurting our veterans. But it's going to take time. It's not going to happen overnight, but it will happen. But it's going to take a group of people that are dedicated to do that. And as you mentioned, I believe President Donald Trump has been a front runner, a pioneer. He's done doing great things up there, and I want to be one of his number one veteran advocates who's fighting for our country and supporting some of his agendas and his policies.
Amen on that, Michael. We really, that it's such a sore spot, and we really, if you can do that, my God, it would be just a miracle. It really would. You know, I just as an aside, I lived in Coral Springs, and in fact, my daughter graduated from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. You know, the nation knows that as Parkland. And they had that massacre. You know, it's right in our own backyard, isn't it? And it's close to Palm Beach County. What's your feeling about protecting our children in schools?
Our priority should be the safety of our nation, of our families, of our, you know, patriots, of our people. Every person in the United States of America should not wake up in the morning and worry about if a roadside bomb's going to go off, if we're going to have a shooting at a school, is it safe to go to a movie theater? That's what we're at it. That's who's trying to attack us. The enemy wants to attack us through those opportunities to create confusion and to create distrust in one another. Because what I believe in is love your neighbor as you love yourself. So if we love each other, if we look out for each other, we won't have this problem. But if you have people, for example, the gun isn't the problem. I fired surface-to-air missiles, missiles on the ground, mines, grenades, machine guns, every type of weapon you can think of. But until you pull the trigger and a round is dispersed from the chamber or from the piece of equipment, nothing happens. Someone has to take an action. So having the training in the community, have people, community awareness. One of the issues that I'm going to be fighting really hard on, besides the shooting at the schools, which I believe that we should have people that are trained professionals, because if you have it there, it's a deterrent. If you have a trained professional at a school, someone who wants to commit a crime is going to know that. So that's going to make them think differently. Well, maybe I shouldn't go to the school, because guess what? Because even though people, you know, have a behavioral health issue or they're thinking things of suicide or, you know, committing a mass crime of destruction, there's still something inside of them. I believe something inside of everyone that it knows right or wrong. Mm-hmm. There's something inside of them. So if you know that there's a deterrent, that's going to make someone think one step further about their plan. And when they start thinking this plan out, they might start to think, you know what, I might not be able to do this. Versus you go into a school, there's no one there to protect you, and you can have free will to do whatever you want. Now, I believe that that's going to be a lot harder to stop in that kind of environment.
You're right. I mean, I think about like what the Israelis do. They harden those schools. They have zero school shootings in Israel. And we should learn something about this. Do you think it's possible that we could create, like you say, a process to harden some of these soft targets?
Absolutely. I mean, and you know who the biggest champions are for this? The community. We have to be aware. We have to understand that it's not just us. I mean, we live in a society here in America, unfortunately, it's just me, 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 me. I look at some of the candidates who are running against me in the Republican Party. I listen to their speeches. You know, they're not out with the community. They're just, I've done this, I've done that. No, it's not I. I mean, I talked to a veteran the other day. He served our country and he's not a U.S. citizen. These are one of the bills that the first bills that I want to, when I get elected in 2021, that I want to bring to the floor. If someone served this country, they have an active DD-214, they should retroactively be considered a U.S. citizen and sworn in. He's been waiting a year for his green card. It costs $750. If you aren't able to serve in this military, how are you a U.S. citizen? That's an atrocity. The reason why I know that is because I'm out in the community. I'm talking to them. I'm listening to their issues. The values that I have and what I stand for, that's very, very important. That's what the voters are going to vote for. But the changes that are going to be happening is going to be the voice of the community, and that's what makes me different, and that's how I'm going to win this election, because the people are tired of their voice just getting ran over.
You know, we live in Florida, both of us, and to their credit, Florida is not a sanctuary state. And I think that speaks very well for the voters of Florida, but how secure is that in this environment of an open border situation, a focus on taking care of illegals jumping a fence versus you know, a veteran, for example, or a homeless person, for example, you're feeling whether we should even have sanctuary cities.
This is the opportunity that we have. We have the opportunity. We've been coming to this. We have had immigration in this country forever, for a long time. Outside of, you know, the American Indians who have been here, you know, from the beginning. So when it comes to immigration, we would just want to know, I believe, this country, the people just want to know that you're your friend. If you're coming into this country that you want to work, you want to improve your quality of life, this is the land of opportunity. Who wouldn't want to come to America? This is the most beautiful, wonderful, powerful nation in the world. Millions of people come to the United States and they want to do good. There's so many amazing stories in the community of people who have come here as immigrants and they've thrived and they've been able to start businesses and they've been able to, you know, have positive influences in the community and started nonprofits. You know, I really believe in the spirit of the people. And so when you come here and you have people like that that want to come here, absolutely. But we want to do it legally. We want to make sure that you're coming here and that you don't want to harm us, because there's a lot of terrorists. There's a lot of child sex trafficking that's happening. I want to be the number one representative fighting child sex trafficking. I want to stop it. Florida's the number three state for it. I want to ensure that our children are safe and that people that are coming into our neighborhoods aren't trying to, you know, kidnap kids or extort them or turn it into modern day slavery. We can't just turn a blind eye. And right here with the Epstein, you know, all the story with that here in Palm Beach County, we have a lot of corruption. And I want to work to stop that corruption, because our youth are so important to society, because they're our future. If we don't respect our children, who do we respect?
You're absolutely right. And the powers that be are going to fight you tooth and nail. I mean, when you told me that they're tracking you, this is very concerning, isn't it?
Well, not for me, because I serve God. So, I mean, I serve this country. I'm not afraid of anything. I mean, I was willing to die for this country. I will die for the people of America. Every single person that lives in America, I will fight for you. I will die for you. It's an obligation I have. It's what I feel in my heart, because I love this country. I love the people. And if that's what it takes, I can't be stopped, because I have no fear. I live my life free. I go to sleep at night, you know, even if I'm going through an obstacle, you know, living in my car, whatever the case may be, whatever ridicule that may come from it, but at least I stand for something. At least I want to fight for something greater than me. But at least I want to do something great in this world, not just go up every single day and just say, oh, well, that's the way it is. I'll just live with it.
The America Out Loud Truth will continue in a moment.
Patriots. Through his widely acclaimed poetry books, The Trump Chronicle, Ray Ray has preserved for us these historic events that have surrounded the first 2 years of the Trump presidency. His fervent and patriotic poems capture in real time what could have easily been lost or forgotten. The Trump Chronicle is available on Amazon or through the America Out Loud bookstore. Pick up a few of these memorable books for your library. They are a must-have for our MAGA movement. Let's support this important patriotic poet and show host so we can continue to read history through poetry.
Michael, you know, freedom of speech seems to be under attack all over the place, from social media, Twitter, for example, Google, search engine manipulation. You know, we've seen attacks on the First Amendment. Thank God that America Out Loud, our platform, is a censor-free platform, other than, you know, some four-letter words, but it's without censorship. Are you concerned with the direction we're going and the attacks on free speech in our country?
Absolutely. People have died for this country. They've shed blood. And God bless all of our military who are serving. God bless our veterans who have come back home and who are fighting every single day in the communities and serving in so many different ways. God bless them and their families, but especially our Gold Star families that have had family members who gave the ultimate sacrifice for this country. I'm in awe for them. You know, it brings a tear to my eye, because I just absolutely love them, because it's such an honor to, you know, for the sacrifice they've made. I mean, it's amazing, honestly, to have that kind of love for America. But when you talk about censorship, there's a reason we're a free nation. And we have to keep it that way. We have our Constitution in place for a reason. Our forefathers, they had great insight. They had awareness. They understood that the republic that they were building had to be something that we continued on. It's a living document. It keeps living every single day. And when you talk about the First Amendment, we do have to worry, you know, when it comes to our leaders who are trying to censor us, and you see businesses through social media or these different platforms. Oh, I don't like what you're saying. You're a racist.
Right.
I'm sorry, but AOC came out on an interview. You know, she's in the representatives. I'm going to hold every person that's accountable. And if they're not American, they shouldn't be serving in a political office. They have to go. I mean, I'm going to work in Congress to write legislation that if you're anti-America, you have to go. You cannot stay in your position. I don't care if you're voted in or not. We still have to have, you know, duty, honor, country. You know, we have to be able to say that I'm an American. I love this country. If you don't love this country, how could you ever serve this country in a political capacity? And whether it's state government, local government, federal government, whatever piece, a piece of the land that you are serving under, it's impossible. And when you talk about the First Amendment and AOC coming out and saying white people are racist, how is that possible? I believe in all humanity. America's a melting pot. You know, yes, racism exists. I served and worked with a very diverse population. I've lived and worked with all different kind of people of different backgrounds. I love all people. When I see someone, I don't see a male or female or, you know, an African American or a Latino or, you know, or a white person. I just see a human being. That's what we have to get back to. But if you say something someone doesn't like, then, oh, I don't like you. You're a bad person. No one. Okay. For example, Home Depot, the CEO said he's going to give X amount of dollars to Donald Trump. He wants to give all this money to President Trump. And then people are going out, don't buy anything at Home Depot, stop shopping there. I mean, that's an attack on our freedom. I mean, at what point are we going to stand up and say, this is absolutely ridiculous and have some consequences?
The opposition wants people to fear a vote, which gets me into the areas of voting integrity. What steps is Congressional District 21 or the state of Florida in general taking to ensure that this 2020 election is on the up and up?
Well, that's one of my biggest concerns, honestly, because I'm out here beating the street, you know, with the voters. I want, to have a clean election. That's all anybody could ask for. I don't want to have corruption or fraud. I mean, this is absolutely ridiculous. We do have a new supervisor of elections in Palm Beach County. She's got new voter equipment. But as you know, in South Florida, we've had tremendous voter fraud. And I don't want to see that occur here. I know Governor DeSantis has been working hard. You know, hopefully we will see a different outcome. But, you know, you have people manipulating. I mean, there's been a lot of talk lately. If you have a state-issued ID, driver's license, that's what you should be able to provide when you go to the voting station so that you can cast your ballot. We have people that are deceased who somehow are voting. We have multiple ballots being filed. We have such a corrupt system with our voting. It's like you can run a clean campaign and do all the right things and still lose. And I don't want that to happen for me. I'm going to fight. You know, I want to make sure that I have an infrastructure on my team and here working locally to not have that happen. But also, there's a lot of people that, you know, they may not like what I'm trying to do here, the positive changes. You know, I'm fighting the corruption. You know, I think there is a lot of back office things happening. So when you have a true patriot that comes in who is a true conservative, a true Republican, you know, that's going to ruffle some feathers. So they're also maybe working. And, you know, I'm not someone that I don't live in fear. Someone's going to do what they're going to do. But my only ask and what I ask the community to stand up is let's have some accountability. Let's be aware. Let's make sure that, you know, we have poll workers and poll watchers that are actually doing the right thing. They're ensuring that our candidates that we're supporting. You mentioned earlier RINOs.
Yes.
We have a lot of people who are Democrats who are running as Republicans and they're getting into office. And then the policies and what they're doing does not adhere to the value system of the Republican Party. And I have a problem with that. I don't agree with that.
You know, I want to move into another subject. But before I do that, I want you to announce your donation site. because God knows we got to get you into some housing. We got to get a little support under you, Michael. I mean, what you're talking about from the position you're taking is amazing, and what you've been through. Can you please tell us what the donation site would be before we move on?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll give you my website, and then I'll give you the donation page. But my website is bloomlinkforcongress.com. So www.bloomlinkforcongress.com. And for the donation page, the link is /donate. So bloomlinkforcongress.com/donate.
Great. And I hope a lot of the listeners, and not just here locally, but, you know, this will eventually get to a podcast and be broadcast really around the world. So I hope that this reaches, the reach for you, Michael, will be far and wide. So thank you very much for that site.
Absolutely. We need all the help we can get. I mean, Lois Frankel, she's the incumbent. She has $1.1 million in the bank because of the corruption down here in 2018. No one has ran. In 2014 and 2016, Paul Spain ran against Lois Frankel. He only received about 30% of the vote, 30-some-odd percent. Mm-hmm. And I've talked to him recently, and he's going to endorse my campaign, which I think is fantastic because he is the last person. But a lot of people down here, it's like, oh, well, no one has a chance. I don't believe in that at all. I believe in the American dream that there is a chance that we're going to win. So it's going to take people, as I mentioned earlier, we need volunteers, we need people to step up, and we need those donations. I had talked to someone anonymous person was texting me. You know, my information's out there. They text me. They said, how are you going to win the election? And I said, my faith in God, I mean, and the people. And they said, well, faith in God isn't enough. It takes money. And I believe that statement is wrong, because I believe the power of God can change anything, but it's the people, you know, and that goes into religious freedoms. I'm all about religious freedoms, you know,
yes,
but I'm
I
also
talk
not
about that.
And I'm also not for the persecution of innocent Christians and Jewish people. We have to protect humanity. Right now, religious freedoms are under attack just as hard as our First Amendment. And to me, it's absolutely disgusting.
Well, we've seen even the words from the freshman congresswomen that are kind of chilling. I mean, I don't know whether people take it seriously, but it stokes fires all over the place in people's minds. And this has to stop. Okay, our Judeo-Christian values are very solid values that they used to be very liberal values, and maybe part of the problem is this overflow of Democrat influence from all of these northern cities for the people that settle down here has had a profound influence. Like Congressional District 21 is Democratic. You know, that has to change. I mean, there's been a big walkaway movement. I'm an example of that. I grew up with, you know, Judeo-Christian values. I consider myself a Judeo-Christian. And I was not different than you. I basically was a Democrat, but that is no longer a Democrat party. But religious freedom, and you said it, is as strong and as necessary as the First Amendment, the Second Amendment. I mean, they were there for a reason. So you're a constitutionalist.
This is what it comes down to. There's a big movement right now, Jexit. And there's a lot of, you know, people who are trying to educate people. And, you know, this is a really deeply rooted issue. I think this is honestly the most fracturing issue in our country is religion. Whether it's in our schools, it's in our jobs, it's you know, in your family, it's in your friends. I mean, religion is meant to be something spiritual and individual, you know, and you bring it together collectively and it's brought together. I was in Germany for outside of my deployments, I was over in Europe for 3.5 years. I was in Germany primarily, and I was at Dachau, which is in Munich, and it's one of the largest concentration camps. And I tell you what, a lot of people feel a certain way without having the actual experience. That's why experience is really critical in life and understanding someone else's viewpoint. You know, I'm someone that I can understand your viewpoint, But let's make sure that, you know, it's based on something of value and that is consistent. Mm-hmm. You know, the Holocaust did happen. Millions of innocent Jewish people were murdered and killed. And that's a piece of our history that we can't forget, but it's a really sad moment. And America stood up and we fought and we defeated that resistance. We defeated Hitler. We just defeated the movement in World War II, thank God. But there's ramifications from that. And today, Christians and Jewish people all over the world are being persecuted, and we have to stand up. You can't. You have to understand, if your party isn't helping you, how can you support them? If you have anti-Semitic words and language built into what you know a party stands for, and if you are a Jewish faith-based person, or are you a Christian faith-based person, how can you stand with that? Because the God I serve, And I'm a Catholic. I was raised Catholic. I was an altar boy. I've been a lector. I believe religion is free for everyone. I don't try to push my views on anyone, but I respect other people. But I never want to harm someone. Like the God I serve and the God I love, and I know that loves this country, loves the American people, it's not about causing harm to people. It's not about killing people. Matter of fact, we have the Ten Commandments that Moses brought down that says, thou shalt not kill. So if we have a society that supports killing innocent people and you want to support that kind of rhetoric, I question where your value system's at. And I want to know, how do you go to sleep at night? Because it's an atrocity.
I obviously take it that you're pro-life as I am. But I want to ask you in the last few minutes we have together about, who were your mentors when you grew up and who are they today?
That's an interesting question, especially with my background and what I've been through in my life. My first real bona fide mentor was actually, I met him in Virginia. Actually, I had a couple, but when I was in the United States Army, I did have Sergeant Patterson. He's retired now, Adrian Patterson. I made sergeant in 2.5 years. I'm very decorated, and he was a key person in that because he believed in me. Everybody in my life, you know, that I've been around sees something different in me. You know, it's just, I just love, you know, I have a big heart. I care about people. You know, I'm vulnerable. You know, a lot of days people just want you to see what they want you to see. You know, I have a lot of fire in my belly. I have passion for this country. I love the American people, but I'm still a human being. I still have feelings. I still go through life just like everyone else. I just want to see a better tomorrow for our country and for the American people. And so Adrian Patterson was a big person, but another person was Alan Allison. We were both investigators together for the Department of Labor, and we met in Virginia, and he's the first person that said, you know, you got to go back to school. You need to further education. And, you know, because of him, honestly, everything that's happened in my life is because of him. But ironically, he doesn't believe with some of the, you know, my political views, and he's kind of, you know, doesn't want to communicate with me in some ways, which I find very sad. You know, he helped build me up to this person I am, but because of my fight or, you know, whatever I believe in, you know, he doesn't want to, you know, associate with me. So it's kind of, mentors are really good, but the thing is what I believe in mentorship is you love the person, and that's where mentorship starts. So being a leader, one of the candidates the other day, actually funny, he called me and he said, it was after the two domestic terrorism actions that we had, and I called out some of the other candidates because they didn't speak out against it. There's nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, I came out against both shootings and I said, you know, God bless the families of the victims. It's not a political stunt. It's showing reverence and humility for these people and this tragedy that our country is facing. You know, nobody wants to go through that. So I called out some of the other candidates. I was questioning, you know, how could you, you know, not say anything? You know, it's been 48 hours. I waited 48 hours and I didn't hear anything. It's like crickets. It's like, how are you going to support us and run for U.S. Congress? And when there's a tragedy our nation is facing and you're not even saying anything, you know, I find, you know, that troubling. So he called me though, and he asked me why I did that. And I said these things, and I said, I'm a leader. And he said, you're not a leader. You're just a candidate. I said, no, I'm a leader for this country. I'm a leader for our community. I don't have to have a title of U.S. Congressman to be a leader. And that's what a mentor is. A mentor is a leader, and they love the person, whether you agree with me or you don't agree with me, you like me, you don't like me, I'm still a leader for you and with you.
You know, obviously, Michael, you have a lot of fire in your gut. You came through. I don't know how you survived your father. You have a spirit that drives you, don't you? What really motivates you deep down?
Honestly, the things that just catch me up, or even through all the adversity. I mean, I was at Lobster Fest last night. It's a local Republican event. And I had one of the community leaders say, "What are you doing here?" I texted him because I didn't want to embarrass him or say anything. "You know what I'm here? I'm here about to win an election and serve the American people. Do your best to try to stop me." I have faith in God. I serve God, not man, but I love God. And when through all the adversity, you know, when I'm with families and I'm there with their children and we get photos together, it makes me melt. I never really had a family. My family was filled with tragedy and just hurtfulness and pain. And so when I see families that, you know, love each other and, you know, care about each other, just it makes me feel great. I mean, everybody, you know, we have high divorce rates, you know, there's different, everybody has a different story. Everybody has a different walk in life. I just want to embrace those stories. I want to let you know that regardless of what you're going through, that someone loves you and cares about you. And it doesn't have to be, you know, a direct family member. You know, it can be somebody in the community. That's what I believe the future of our country, how we can turn it around, is by showing love to one another.
Well, Michael, I just want to thank you. It's been an inspiring hour with you. And I know that you will impact a lot of people. I know it's my own backyard, and we need someone like you. We really do. That puts all of those pieces together into a whole human being. It's really a humanitarian approach that I think we really need, and getting away from this money and lobbyist power affecting this for so long. So I want to thank you, and I want to read a poem just to finish off today. I wrote about a year ago during the 2018 election, and it's called Florida's Peril. The population's diverse. Every country's on hand. They came to escape threats in their native homelands. The Cubans on boats, oh, the stories they tell. Enslaved by a communist dictator by the name of Fidel. All come here to Florida to be legally free. Never again empty shelves, nor be brought to their knee. From South American countries, Central America too, the mirage known as socialism finally comes into view. Winter season for snowbirds from panhandles to Keys. Of course, Mar-a-Lago, home of our President T. An ideology that clamors that it's no longer yours. We must vote to extinguish, slam this socialist type door. Prepare for a battle along miles of beaches and sand. The red tsunami of DeSantis and Scott must take claim to our Floridian land. It's no time to question. It's high time to act. Our cause is for freedom, and there's no turning back. And on that note, love Ray Ray and a poem.